All right, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to welcome everyone to class this morning for Lesson 110, the formation of Milwaukee Bible Institute, now known as Grace Bible College. Before we get started, I was going through some stuff yesterday in my basement, and I came across some stuff that I forgot I had. And I believe it was Lee that gave this to me, but these are old editions of the brand Searchlight. I think I've got volumes like 1 through 10 or something like that. But there's a couple things that I just wanted to show you. This is from the 1945 edition. So this would have been like the third or fourth edition. And there's Stam gives all through this updates on his traveling ministry with the Worldwide Grace Testimony. Remember I told you that 1943 O'Hare approached him about leaving the church in Preakness, New Jersey and becoming a traveling representative of the Worldwide Grace Testimony. There's quite a bit of stuff in here about that. There's also stuff in this one about the formation, the meeting that was held in September 1944 to discuss the formation of the GGF, and I thought I marked that. Hear that? The Evansville Convention, the Grace Movement gains momentum. This is all about the meeting that they had there in Indiana to discuss it. And then there's a reproduction here of the doctrinal statement at the time of the Worldwide Grace Testimony that the GGF was eventually going to adopt. And then there's also an announcement in the back of the tentative name for the fellowship as the Grace Gospel Fellowship, and this was put out by Herman Rich, and Stam Rich into that. Also, I found stuff here announcing, and we're going to get into this stuff here this morning. In the next volume, I found notations in the Brian Searchlight about the launching of the Milwaukee Bible Institute, which we're going to talk about this morning. So just further documentation here of some things that we've already been talking about. So if you look at your notes, introduction and review, in Lesson 108, we studied the formation of the Grace Gospel Fellowship in 1944-45. One of the things we noted as part of that lesson was that at the first GGF convention in 1945, a need was voiced for a Bible Institute training program, since many Grace young people had been denied entrance into the mainline programs due to their stance on water baptism. So what was happening is there were some grace-oriented young people that were understanding Pauline truth and so forth, trying to get into big Bible institutes, and they were not being allowed entrance because of their stance on water baptism. So at the first GGF convention, they had this discussion about the need for a training school. So if you look at point number two, Ray Rich reports that a Bible Institute committee was organized in May 1945 and charged with the task of starting a Bible Institute program, possibly by September of that same year. So look, they're meeting in May 45 and saying, we need to have a Bible Institute training program, and oh, by the way, it needs to start in September. So they're only giving themselves like 3 months to figure this thing out, for all intents and purposes. And interestingly enough, it's in the August 1945 edition that Stam notes that the Bible Institute's going to be launched and they're going to have their first classes starting in September of that same year. So they seem to have stuck to this time schedule that they set for themselves at this May 1945 meeting. So in this lesson, I want to consider how the school came into existence is basically the point of this particular lesson. And what I've done with this is I've broken the notes down, tracing the various name changes of the school. Okay, so the first section of the notes then is Milwaukee Bible Institute. One of the first considerations of the Grace Gospel Fellowship after its inception was the establishment of a school to train its pastors and missionaries. The committee appointed to this task, composed of Charles F. Baker, chairman, J.C. O'Hare, Otis Watson, T.R. Houston, T.R. Houston met at Des Plaines, Illinois in June 1945 after investigating several locations in the Midwest and decided to locate the new school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, Milwaukee is an obvious choice because that's where Baker was the pastor of the church, Fundamental Bible Church in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mr. Baker had organized a local evening Bible institute, which had been in operation since 1939. And it was decided to take over this school, enlarge its faculty and staff, and inaugurate a three-year Bible Institute curriculum. So Pastor Baker was already doing some training of some men and so forth within his church. And when they did their investigation to figure out where they were going to do this, when they were going to do it, and so on, it became somewhat clear to the men that they needed to build upon what Pastor Baker had already started in 1939. So that's what they did, and that's why they located the school originally in Milwaukee. In 3 short months which remained before the opening of the school, a curriculum was developed, a catalog published, and a faculty was assembled, consisting of Charles F. Baker, president and instructor in theology, C.R. Stamm, registrar and instructor in Bible and evangelism, H.B. McIntyre, instructor in Greek, English, and history, and Teresa B. Baker, instructor in Christian education and music. So that's the original faculty of Milwaukee Bible Institute. Yeah?
Is Teresa Childs'
wife? I believe so. As far as I can tell, I think that's the case. During the 1945-46 session, 14 students from 8 states were enrolled. Several of these were transfer students, making it possible to graduate 2 at the first commencement in 1946 and 2 at the second commencement in 1947. Enrollment jumped to over 40 during the 1947-48 school year and to 70 during 1948-49. So the school started with an original faculty of Baker, Stamm, McIntyre teaching Greek, English, and history, and Baker's wife doing music and Christian education. So what you have here is a 3-year Bible Institute program in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, building upon what Baker had already been doing in his sort of evening classes or whatever with the people there from Milwaukee. The first semester classes were to be held in the old Fundamental Bible Church building. For the second semester, a large 3-story house was acquired, which served as classrooms and women's dormitory. In 1946, another house in the same block was purchased. And in 1947, a beautifully landscaped campus was purchased on West State Street, where were located the Tower House, serving as library and administration buildings, a remodeled building serving as classrooms, bookstore, kitchen, and dining hall, and another house used as a dormitory. So this is, you know, this is not a wonderful, equipped Ivy League school here. They're basically, you know, cobbling together what they can as they can afford to do it to create, to create the facilities that they're going to need here to do this. And it starts off, you know, very small, very modestly, and over time, it's going to grow. Pastor Stamm also recounts the events surrounding the founding of Milwaukee Bible Institute in his memoirs. According to Stamm, he joined Charles F. Baker in establishing MBI, originally agreeing to stay for 2 years. Stamm says that his initial commitment was only a 2-year commitment. That's what he claims in his memoirs. In actual fact, Stamm stayed for 5 years before he resigned his position at the Institute in 1950. Many of Stamm's most recognized and influential books were originally written as textbooks for Milwaukee Bible Institute. So if you look at some of Stamm's more well-known books, obviously Things That Differ comes to mind, The Twofold Purpose of God, some of these other books were originally put together as part of the curriculum for Milwaukee Bible Institute. If you look at the quote, he says, Stamm's memoirs record, he says, Pastor Baker was president, and I an instructor, and I dean an instructor. I have 13 hours of teaching each week, in addition to at least twice as many hours of preparing lessons, grading papers, etc., for we had to blaze some trails. At that time, we had no textbooks, even recognizing our dispensational belief, and this affected some or most of our courses. Indeed, some of my books are really textbooks which I compose for these classes. Among them, Things That Differ, or Fundamentals of Dispensationalism, True Spirituality, Man, His Nature and Destiny, Acts Dispensationally Considered, Moses and Paul, and The Twofold Purpose of God. So Stan is saying that those, that collection of books there were originally put together by him to serve as the curriculum for these various classes at Milwaukee Bible Institute. And that checks out, because when you start looking through these old Berean searchlights for when certain books begin to be advertised as available, they're not until the 50s that some of these things are out there. So what I perceive happened is that he wrote them for class in some sort of note form, maybe similar to what I'm giving you, probably refined it and so forth during the class, and then eventually took those notes and had them published as standalone books. In the midst of his, I'm at the next point now, in the midst of his work at MBI, Stan still needed to find time to write and publish the Berean Searchlight. The cumulative effect is that Stan suffered two heart attacks shortly after resigning from Milwaukee Bible Institute in 1950. So you can imagine sort of the intense pressure that he's under here, okay? He's got monthly deadlines on the Berean Searchlight. He's got 13 hours of teaching, grading papers, preparing curriculum, still also going out on the weekends and traveling for the Worldwide Grace Testimony. And you can really see the strain that Stan would have been under at this point. And eventually it just becomes too much for him. And he only made a two-year commitment originally to start with. And in 1950, after 5 years, he resigns his position at the school. And shortly after that, according to his memoirs, he does suffer a couple heart attacks. So in 1951, the Fundamental Bible Church built their new edifice adjoining the campus and granted the use of its facilities to the Institute, thus providing needed classrooms. So any questions about the first section here?
Question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just surprised that financially they were able to keep doing everything that they were doing, plus pay all the teachers and then buy a whole campus besides the two houses they bought. And I'm just, where did the money come from for all that?
The money is coming from, you asked, that's a great question, because, you look at some of the stuff O'Hare's doing. I don't have it with me, but I intend on bringing it in here in the next couple of weeks. I got full page ads from the back of the Chicago Daily News that the North Shore Church took out and put in the back of the Chicago newspaper. So there are people involved in this that either A, have money, or B, are willing to support this stuff financially because of how much they're learning, growing, and appreciating what they're, what they're getting out of these ministries. And I mean, you think about, look, I know I was critical a few weeks ago of the organization of GGF, and I still say, rightfully so. But if you look at these guys are doing a lot. I mean, you look at everything these guys are doing. When I say these guys, I mean Baker, the big three for sure, Baker, Stam, and O'Hare. And then other people tend to get overlooked in all that, which probably isn't fair. But this generation of men is really trying to do what they think they should do to really put forward this message, to a greater audience of people. And yeah, it cost money, and there were people that were obviously willing to support it within the Grace movement at that time. And coming out of the Great Depression, World War II, that they had this kind of money, it is a little bit surprising. Yeah.
In the list of the four original instructors, you have an H.P. McIntyre.
Mm-hmm.
Just curious if he would be related to any of the McIntyres around here, because there was a slew of them at Grace Bible Church when I was attending there as a youth.
I don't know. Could be. I don't know what his connection would have been or where it came from. Mike?
I think it was a good idea to start the school in Milwaukee rather than in Chicago at O'Hare's church, because they would have been under the umbrella of a Moody Bible Institute. Casting a huge shadow over starting a brand new school like that, because at that time Moody Bible Institute was the bastion of fundamentalism in America. So I wonder if that had any.
I think the initial decision, Mike, was basically one of logistics. Because when, as we'll see in a few minutes, when eventually it comes time that they've got to leave Milwaukee, Chicago was heavily entertained as a new location. So I don't know that Moody Bible Institute was necessarily something that was prohibiting them from considering it. But it would have been direct competition, basically a few blocks over from where they would have been. So, but I have more to say about that, I think, in a minute. You got a question, Craig? All right, Milwaukee Bible College. This is the next section. 1955 saw another physical plant expansion with the completion of a new three-story library and dormitories at a cost of $200,000. That's cheap now.
That was a ton of money then.
Yeah. More importantly, in 1955, the academic focus of the school changed. Mr. Ray Rich states the following regarding this change in the July 1974 article for Truth Magazine, Our Grace Heritage. Quote, he says, that same year, he's referring to 1955, another advance academically was made, realizing that the three-year institute program was not able to give adequate training for pastors. An additional year was added to the curriculum, and the institute was reincorporated as Milwaukee Bible College. The Bachelor of Arts degree was granted for completion of this program. A Bachelor of Theology degree was also offered for college graduates who completed two more years of advanced studies. So now you need to not view this as just a random name change. Okay? This name change from Bible Institute to Bible College is a significant change. Okay? Top of page 3. Jack T. Dean and Dale S. DeWitt authored a series of articles in Comment magazine in the mid-1990s to commemorate the school's 50th anniversary. Dean and DeWitt state the following regarding the school's decision to expand and become a Bible college. Quote, the question arose immediately in development of curriculum. How long and how broad of a curriculum do we need? The founding committee, all of whom became members of the first board, along with Herman Rich, decided upon a three-year Bible Institute curriculum. Such a limited curriculum was not considered ideal, but was seen initially as a practical necessity. As knowledge had deepened and the population became more sophisticated, most Christian educators have recognized the need for a more thorough education of all professionals, including those going into the ministry. It was the long-range goal of C.F. Baker, first president, and Dean, second president, to eventually provide a seminary education for Our Grace young people, which would be built upon 4 years of undergraduate work. The board adopted this goal, recognizing it would be a long process. The first step in the process was taken in 1954, when a fourth year was added to the Bible Institute curriculum, and the name was changed from Institute to College. This added year allowed the college to offer four different programs. Number one, the four-year Bible college course, specifically designed for pastors, missionaries, and Christian educators. Second, the three-year Bible Institute program, specifically designed for those who will be doing Christian ministry but perhaps will major in another field such as medicine, education, or homemaking. Third, two-year postgraduate course, specifically designed for those who already had a college degree in another discipline. And four, a two-year Christian worker certificate, specifically designed for laymen who desired solid training for lay ministries. So, everybody understand what they're doing here. Okay? So, if you look at the next point, the impact of this change should not be overlooked. Now, instead of Milwaukee Bible Institute being a three-year Bible and pastoral training school, Milwaukee Bible College added liberal arts education to the curriculum. This is indicative of a major shift in philosophy of the school that not all members of the GGF supported. Within the next 15 years, this decision would greatly impact the future of the school. Not everybody in the GGF was on board with this decision. Okay? This decision, you understand the difference between an institute and a college. Okay? There's significant differences in terms of degree programs and what's going to be offered and required to move from an institute to a Bible college. And so this move of bringing in a liberal arts education in the mid-1950s was not a unanimously agreed upon thing. And as you're going to see by 1970, this begins to swirl, as it were, some undercurrents within the GGF over what should be the real purpose of their school. And STEM is going to get involved in that swirling, and so are other people. And there's going to begin to be some, you know, real friction in within the GGF over really what the role of the school should be and whether or not they should be focused on simply Bible Institute curriculum and training people that are going to be preachers, or whether they should expand that out to include liberal arts and to prepare Christian young people for other avenues of service or what have you. And that sort of begins to swirl here in the mid-50s as a result of this decision to add the liberal arts training and become a four-year Bible college instead of remaining simply a Bible institute.
One of the things that goes with that, too, often is when you want to start offering degrees and stuff, you begin to become under requirements set by the state and
yep.
different outside organizations that you have to provide a certain amount of that type of curriculum.
You have to have so many hours in different categories of study to, and what you, then your hours that used to be devoted solely to Bible instruction and theology are now going to start to be eaten up by other things. And look, and I guess it depends on why you want to have the school. If you want to have the school to train preachers, and that's the only reason why you want to have the school, then maybe you don't need all that stuff. If you want to have a bigger reach and influence and maybe attract more students because you offer more degree programs or whatever, then, you know, then maybe you offer it. And so you're right though, Fred, there's tension and friction there between that. And I can tell you right now, I was talking to Dr. DeWitt recently about this, and when I met with the current president of Grace Bible College last spring, they are trying right now with the North Central Crediting Association to expand and offer a Masters of Divinity at GBC. So they are trying to do what they said they wanted to do way back here that they knew would take a long time to get it done. I don't know where they're at in that process, but my point right now is just to say that this decision to change the school ends up to be a major thing 10 years later. Okay? Yeah.
Another thing that I can imagine was impacting that move is grandparents with money and parents with money wanting to send their kids who maybe aren't planning to go into the ministry, wanting to send them to a college that is not secular, that is not teaching evolution and things like that, that is not going to expose their children to elements that they don't necessarily want their kids having to deal with in early adulthood.
And I think that's definitely a factor. To what degree, I can't say, but it's definitely one of the pieces to this. Mike?
It was a huge debate in America, like Fred pointed out. There were dozens and dozens of Bible institutes in America at one time. They all either stayed a Bible institute or turned into a college, and the whole issue that was always discussed was government intervention into the college, telling you what to do, what you could have done, how many books you had to have in your library,
yep.
to financial aid, to everything they wanted to hand in, and it was just a huge debate with not just the GGF, but all the Bible institutes in America, and most of them had to capitulate and go into the decide to go the college route. But
I haven't stayed like some schools here, right here in Grand Rapids. I mean, look at Cornerstone now.
Cornerstone.
I mean, Cornerstone is now Cornerstone University. They offer master's programs and started out as a Bible Institute. You know, to my knowledge, I think that Moody has still remained a Bible Institute, to my knowledge, by and large.
It is, but I think it's degree offering now, too, but it's still going under the...
So, you know...
The Grand Rapids School of Bible Music decided to stay a Bible Institute philosophically, and it's no longer in existence.
Right. So, I just want you to be aware of this. In the 50s, in the mid 50s, it just seemed like a decision that was made. Part of what maybe they wanted to do the whole time, I don't know. But you need to understand that not everybody was on board with this. Okay. Most notably, Mr. Stamm. Okay, and we'll talk more about that in future lessons. In 1960, the school was faced with a crisis. The city building inspection department ruled that the college could no longer use the church facilities as classrooms because they were located in the basement. Only two options were open. Either build a new classroom building or sell the campus to a Lutheran college, which was anxious to acquire it. The board decided on the latter course and a search was begun for a new campus. Now, there was a fire at a school in Chicago, and some students were in a classroom in the basement of this building for which there was no alternative exit, and many of them died in this fire. And so it is commonly reported by people that were alive from this era of the Grace Movement that that Grace Bible College came from Milwaukee to Grand Rapids via Chicago. Because that Chicago fire is what prompted the building inspectors in Milwaukee to tell those guys up there that they could no longer use those classrooms in the basement of the church building. And so now they had a major problem on their hands. And a Lutheran school not far away called Concordia University wanted to buy the property. And so they decided to sell the property to Concordia. And then that's set off the chain of events that eventually they land here in Grand Rapids. Okay. So top of page 4. After agreeing to sell the Milwaukee property to Concordia College, I'm sorry, it was a college, not a university, the Milwaukee Bible College Board of Directors had 18 months to secure and prepare a new campus. The first question was, where should the college be located? There were plenty of suggestions: Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, Grand Rapids, Indianapolis, and every place in between. Investigations were made into many specific sites. One with some appeal was an old YMCA building in Racine, Wisconsin, including a gym, swimming pool, and bowling alleys. The asking price was $185,000. The board visited the site, evaluating all aspects. When the vote to purchase was taken, A tie resulted, and Chairman Robert Johnson broke the tie with a negative vote. A former mental hospital in Waukesha, Wisconsin, as well as a hotel resort in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, were also considered.
Wow.
Lake Geneva, that if they would have went there, they would have been right up the street from where my dad's church is right now in Genoa City, Wisconsin. Eventually, the board narrowed the field and decided to vote on three general locations: Chicago, Milwaukee, and Grand Rapids. On the 8th ballot, Grand Rapids received 6 of the 9 votes, and thus the decision was made. 2 Grand Rapids locations were under consideration. On June 25, 1960, the board decided to purchase 10 acres in Wyoming, a suburb of Grand Rapids, 2 blocks from the New Berean Bible Church, for $24,000. The 4 original buildings included 2 residence halls, 1 building with 4 classrooms, a library, and many offices, and a 4th building for student services, including a kitchen, student lounge, and a dining hall slash chapel auditorium. The total area was 32,000 square feet, and the price of land, landscaping, and construction was $450,000. Now, there's certain things here that I still have to learn. I know that O'Hare was lobbying hard, or did lobby hard at some points to get the college to locate the Grand Rapids. Or, I'm sorry, Chicago. And for some reason, they didn't. I believe there to be more to that story that is yet to be discovered. I think there were some possibly in political things. By 1960, O'Hare is dead. He dies in 58, and I'm not sure there's... I don't want to raise undue speculation, but there's some things that I've been told that I need to find more out about why they go to Grand Rapids and not Chicago. But the decision is made, and they end up in Grand Rapids. Another difficulty was finding a new name for the college. Milwaukee Bible College did not seem appropriate, although it was one of the 36 names suggested. A naming committee was appointed, and they recommended the name Michigan Bible College. One advantage was that the initials could remain the same, MBI. The new board unanimously accepted the recommendation on the first ballot. The name was announced in Truth Magazine. However, when the name was submitted to the Michigan Corporation and Securities Commission, its use was denied since there already was a Michigan Bible College in Michigan. Eventually, the name Grace Bible College was selected and properly registered. So that was not the original name they wanted. They wanted a Michigan Bible College so they could keep the same initials. So it already existed, so they had to choose something else, and they chose Grace Bible College. Another difficulty involved personnel. Would the faculty and students move? Most of the Milwaukee faculty and staff moved to Grand Rapids. The last difficulty of the move was the relationship with the Michigan State Board of Education. So here you go, Fred. Okay. We soon learned that Wisconsin and Michigan viewed things differently. In Wisconsin, we confirmed the Bachelor of Arts, yet in Michigan, we were not allowed to do this since we were a Bible college and therefore must confer the Bachelor of Religious Education. When we asked to see written documentation about that, we were told that there was none, but that this was the way Bible colleges were regulated in Michigan. The Michigan Board of Education also expected professors to have graduate degrees in the fields in which they were teaching. This meant that some new adjunct faculty had to be hired to teach general education, liberal arts courses. This expectation had merit, and we have appreciated the qualified Christian adjunct faculty. The administration of GBC remained completely in control of selecting adjunct faculty from other colleges. But here you go, okay? Now you got the government saying what? You got to have a master's degree to teach at the bachelor level. Well, we don't have any Grace people that have master's degrees to teach, so we got to bring in people from other what? From other denominations to teach. So now we have our liberal arts college, but we have within some of our core liberal arts, English and history and stuff like that, we've got Christian teachers, but they're not of our doctrinal persuasion. Okay? And so now you're going to start to have... Tom's shaking his head. I mean, this is a reality they still face when it comes to this. Okay? So, yeah. Craig?
With what you know about Grace Bible College right now, how many professors there do you think are of our doctrinal persuasion?
The short answer to that would be to talk to Bud. Because Bud at Chrysler is a current student there. He was sharing with Becky... not that long ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, that in one of his classes, it was a dispensational or a theology class where they spent some time talking about dispensational theology, that the professor finally had some of the students convinced that they had to read the Bible literally and that tongues weren't for today and a few other, you know, grace-related things. And then that whole class went to the next class. They brought in a professor from a Reformed church who the first thing he says is, you got to read the Bible allegorically. And so he, in the very next class, what they learned in the previous class was undermined by this next professor that wasn't of the persuasion. So you have all this sort of thing going on, and if you want to talk to somebody about it, you should talk to him.
I talked to him, but that's one of the reasons I decided not to take any classes.
But that all that goes back to this here. This requirement that you had to have a postgraduate a graduate degree that the state of Michigan has, when they relocated, this was sort of foisted upon them, and they didn't know this was going to be the case. And so now they have to adjust to it, and the result is they're having to bring in faculty that are not necessarily in agreement with the doctrinal statement of the school. And I can tell you that it was that way when I was there also. Okay, they've tried to keep most of their Bible and theology professors, you know, from within their own ranks, as it were, but obviously that's not always happening. Okay? You have any follow up on that?
Well, no, Dan, one of the classes that Buzz took, I think it was Survey of the Bible or Introduction to Old Testament, maybe, or something like that, was by Rick Warren.
That's the book they used?
Yeah.
Alrighty. Page 5, Grace Bible College. According to Dean and DeWitt, 72 students from 15 states enrolled in the first Grand Rapids semester in 1961. On October 31st, 1961, the new campus was dedicated to the Lord with a full day of activity, concluding with the dedication address by Dr. S.A. Whitmer, Executive Secretary of AABC, American Association of Bible Association, I think that should say, Sylvia, American Association of Bible Colleges. The board and administration of GBC have always been interested in college accreditation. For accreditation is to a college what a seal of the Better Business Bureau is to a business. After an exhaustive 3-year self-evaluation and evaluations by outside educational examiners, Grace Bible College was accredited by AABC on October 27, 1964. Every 10 years, it has been necessary for the college to submit to another self-evaluation and an evaluative campus visit accreditation to reaffirm. And an evaluative campus visit accreditation was reaffirmed in 1974, 1984, 1994. So you go up 2004, and they're probably up for it again next year. As the college grew, more space was needed everywhere. Constructing a new library building would serve two purposes. Number one, make the library more dominant on campus as a center of learning. And two, free former library space for much-needed offices and a conference room. I did. Sorry about that. President at the time, Charles F. Baker, took a leave of absence during the 1965-66 school year to work on his textbook, A Dispensational Theology. In his absence, the board appointed Jack T. Dean to be acting president. On October 26, 1967, Dr. Dean was inaugurated as the second president of GBC. Dr. Dean came well qualified for this most responsible position. He had served on the faculty since 1955 and had earned degrees of Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Theology, Master of Arts, and Doctor of Philosophy. The same evening, Mr. Baker was honored with the title President Emeritus and Distinguished Professor of Theology. So, Notice what's going on there. Dean starts teaching on the faculty in what year?
55.
What year do they switch from an institute to a college? 55. Okay. Baker takes a leave of absence to work on his textbook in Dispensational Theology, which, by the way, is an excellent book. You should all have a copy of that book. It's a great book. But anyway, in the meantime, Dean is inserted as the interim president, and after a time, they vote to make him the second president of the school, and Baker is given the title of President Emeritus and Distinguished Professor of Theology. As the college grew, more space was needed. I read that, the need for conference room. A major step was taken in 1968 with the erection of the new Baltimore Memorial Library. Dr. Baltimore, pastor of the Berean Church of Muskegon until his death in 1952, was himself an author of numerous books, both in Dutch and English, and his extensive library was donated to the college. I don't know if you knew that or not, but a lot of the base texts that are books, the volumes that are in that library were in Baltimore's library, and the family donated them to the school. The Church of Berean, the Berean Church of Muskegon, along with members of the Baltimore family, helped initiate the fundraising. The Baltimore Memorial Library was dedicated and opened on April 26, 1968, under the planning and direction of librarian Raymond Rich. It was also during this time that the controversial Journal of Grace Theology was first published in 1967. In time, this publication would serve as a lightning rod of criticism for GBC. What's that?
What exactly was the controversy?
See, one article in particular, spring of 1966, which we'll talk about in the future lesson, is published in the Journal of Grace Theology, which was a periodical at the time of the faculty of the school, called The Spirit of Bereanism by David Weddle. That article is what touched off the STAM-GBC controversy. And you'll know why when we get to that article. I don't have it with me, but Mike's read it, and it's a fairly troubling read, I'll just say it that way. Especially for a school like GBC to be publishing an article like that in their theological journal. I think I got that wrong. I think it was, I'm going to have to check the date of the first publication, because I think it's either 66 or 67. But anyway, that's the thing that sort of first, I'll say it this way, Craig. Starting in 55, with the decision to go liberal arts and change the name from institute to college, there was a pool of people within the GGF that did not like that decision. And in the intermittent 10 years or so, they perceived so now they're watching after a move to Grand Rapids, adjunct faculty, people being added to the faculty that aren't grace, as it were, and becoming more and more disturbed by what they see. And then this journal is published, and there's a very, very controversial article in it about what it means to be a Berean, arguing that Bereanism should include everything from civil rights to, what else is in that, Mike? Civil rights movement, certain types of certain types of risque literature, all sorts.
The arts and literature.
The arts and literature, advocating for a much more expanded view of things. Stam reads it and immediately, as it were, went on the warpath.
Because this time, by 67, Stam's not associated with the school at all anymore anyway, right?
Stam has resigned in 50.
Yeah.
He's still in the GGF. He's still highly regarded as a leader in the GGF, but he has not had anything to do with the school by this point for going on between 15 or 20 years. Okay? So, top of page 6. Although the 60s were formative, exciting years of growth, they were not without some difficulties. Some of the questions raised about the college were the following. Number one, identification of the terms fundamentalist and evangelical. Another thing that makes people upset is that Jack Dean, president of the school, says in a comment that he doesn't wish to be identified as a fundamentalist. That makes Sam mad too. Okay? But we'll get to this in more specificity in due time. The amount of emphasis upon dispensational teaching. How much dispensational teaching do we need to include in the curriculum? The whole debate about education or indoctrination, narrowness or breadth of education, the study of the work of the Holy Spirit, the code of behavior for students, should they be allowed to go to movies and play cards, stuff like that. The use of non-GGF faculty becomes a sticking point, and the King James or contemporary Bible translations. The Bible issue takes a turn through the school in discussions in the 60s. So all of these things are going on at the, you know, it's sort of a concentrated period of time where all these things are sort of being all debated at the same time amongst not only the faculty of the school, but against the wider members of the GGF. Okay? And it's this sort of mix or cauldron of stuff that's all sort of going to be swirling in a pot that's going to start bubbling over here at the end of the 60s. So, to conclude it, and then we'll see if there's any questions, as we'll see in future lessons, some of the controversies outlined above, and that's in the list immediately above, would rock the college to its core at the end of the 1960s and ultimately lead to a split within the Grace Gospel Fellowship. Before we can comment further on these issues, we need to take some time to develop the greater historical context in which these events occurred so that we might understand them properly. Establishing the historical setting will be the goal of a couple of lessons in this project. If I just jump into this, you're not going to really get the whole picture, okay? Because what's going on at the college in the late 60s is indicative of a larger movement that is going on within, shall we say, Protestant fundamentalism in the United States at that time. And so the controversies and the things that are becoming, that are coming to the forefront, that are ultimately going to lead to a split within the GGF, are not isolated incidences within the GGF. They are part of a bigger story, as it were, that was going on on a larger level. Now, some of you that are older than me, you might remember this stuff. You might you lived through it to varying degrees. The controversies between the fundamentalists and the evangelicals, and arguing back and forth about what should be the, you know, what is the proper role of the church, and what, just all sorts of debates that were going on. So what ultimately is going to manifest itself at Grace Bible College and in the split in the GGF is part of a bigger story and a bigger, you know, flow of history than what was simply going on within the GGF and GBC at that time. And I should say that I got to give credit to Dr. Dale DeWitt for pointing that out to me and turning me on to I read about 7 books this summer about this controversy, and I think I finally understand what was going on and why these men within GBC and inside the GGF were so divided over what the role of the school was in terms of Christian education and how that ultimately led to the split in the GGF. Okay? So before we get into these things specifically, we gotta kinda talk about a few preliminary things, okay? And besides, we're only in 1945 right now, technically anyway, with the founding. So I've taken the history of GBC from its founding in 1945 as Milwaukee Bible Institute through about 1968, Grace Bible College, and now located in Milwaukee. Or I'm sorry, Grand Rapids. All right, any questions or comments about any of this? Fred?
Yeah, what you just said toward the end there is what I was thinking through the process, is that this was almost like a trend going on throughout fundamental Christianity that's going on at this time. Might have had to do with the 60s itself, because the 60s, you know, was kind of a cultural revolution.
The seeds of all this stuff, Fred, start after World War II. After the national crisis of World War II is over, a group of young, professionally trained intellectual theologians begin a purposeful attempt to redefine fundamentalism in the United States. Okay, and it starts with a book by Carl F. H. Henry called The Uneasy Conscience of Modern Fundamentalism, which he wrote in 1947. And that book is sort of a shot across the bow of fundamentalism that we need to change or we're going to die, is basically what he says. The problem with the book, at least from the standpoint of fundamentalists, is that he advocates for things that for them appear to be very liberal. And we're going to talk about that book in a few weeks. Okay? Yeah?
I can remember during that time, and probably Fred also, that fundamentalism was debating whether the Bible was plenary inspiration of scriptures versus limited inerrancy, which is just like, which was unheard of with fundamentalism, because fundamentalism, that's what fundamentalism is, full plenary inspiration of scriptures. But here we're debating it. Because it was infiltrating through the Bible schools and institutes.
And the other thing that happened in the late 40s was the establishment of Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena, California. Okay? Fuller purposefully established a group of what he called positive fundamentalists. And what he meant by that was fundamentalists that were not going to be separatists, but that were going to try to seek common ground where common ground could be sought amongst a broad base of Protestants, yet not give up the fundamentals of fundamentalism, is what they were setting out to try to accomplish. Okay? And it's out of that, it's out of Fuller Theological Seminary that you end up having Billy Graham and Christianity Today, that the first editor of which was Carl F. Henry. Okay? And so then these guys, just a second, Ronnie, these guys then from there try to establish on purpose a bastion of to reform fundamentalism from. Okay?
So also during that same period of time that the proliferation of different editions of the translations of the Bible started to come.
Yep.
Come off too.
Ronnie?
It was not just fundamentalism per se that those winds were blowing through. I remember reading some book that my kids, and I don't know which one, that, for instance, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod had discovered that because their doctrinal statements that were written back in the 1500s did not have a specific statement about the inspiration of scriptures and, that spelled that out, that liberalism had taken over their colleges. And this book that Mike has said that of all the various denominations that had gone liberal in their colleges, that the LCMS was the only one that managed to override that and adopt a doctrinal statement for the inspiration of scriptures and make their... And I remember, because I was Lutheran at the time, but I was just a kid, I remember the thing of what they called Seminex. It was seminary in exile, and the liberals were cast out of the college and they started their own little seminary, and they pulled the church back to a conservative position.
What started the fundamentalist modernist controversy was that exact thing. The infiltration into mainline Protestant denominations of liberalized theology that questioned the inerrancy of the scriptures, that questioned that promoted the human origin of the Bible over its divine origin, and a host of other things. And so the original, and we'll talk more about this next week, but the original fundamentalist coalition was really a Protestant-wide movement of theological conservatives that didn't like this infiltration of liberal modernism into their denominations. And the whole defining the term fundamentalist is its own conundrum in and of itself, and which I'll probably show you next week. But my point right now is for you to understand that this stuff that happens at GBC is not happening in a vacuum somewhere with no connection to what's going on out in the wider theological world, as it were. Okay? And that these things are going to be playing heavily into what ends up happening in the late 60s with the Grace Movement and the Grace Gospel Fellowship. But we got to quit. I appreciate your attention. Next week, we'll start looking at this with a lesson titled Reforming Fundamentalism.